Please be seated. We will get there. I have a story for all ages, for all of us this morning. It was actually recommended to me by my boss. And I wonder, as I'm reading this story, if you will begin to see why the minister in charge of transitions within congregations might be interested and have in this little story about Chester. It's called Chester's Way. Now, I have a sort of a disadvantage because I can't see the slides, but I'm going to trust Nancy. She's got me covered. I totally trust her. So Chester has his own way of doing things. He always cuts his sandwiches diagonally. He always goes to bed on the same side. He's never left the house without double knotting his shoes. Chester always had the same thing for breakfast, toast with jam and peanut butter. And he always carried a miniature first aid kit in the back pocket, just in case. "You'll definitely have a mind of your own," said Chester's mother. "That's one way to put it," said Chester's father. Now, Chester's best friend, Wilson, was exactly the same way. That's why they were best friends. Chester wouldn't play baseball unless Wilson played, and they never swung at the first pitch or slid headfirst. Wilson wouldn't ride his bike unless Chester wanted to, and they always used hand signals. If Chester was hungry, Wilson was too, and they rarely ate between meals. "Some days, I can't tell those two apart," said Wilson's mother. "Me either," said Wilson's father. "Chester and Wilson, Wilson and Chester, that's the way it was." They loved to go on picnics. Once, when Wilson accidentally swallowed a watermelon seed and cried because he was afraid that a watermelon plant would grow inside him, Chester swallowed one too. "Don't worry," said Chester. "Now if you grow a watermelon plant, I'll grow one too." Chester duplicated his Christmas list every year and gave a copy to Wilson because they always wanted the very same things anyway. And for Halloween, they always dressed as things that went together: salt and pepper shakers, two mittens on a string, ham and eggs. "They really were two peas in a pod," said Chester's mother. "Looks like it," said Chester's father. In spring, Chester and Wilson shared the same umbrella. In winter, they never threw snowballs at each other. In fall, they raked leaves together. In summer, they reminded each other to wear sunscreen so they wouldn't burn. Chester and Wilson, Wilson and Chester, that's the way it was. And then Lily moved into the neighborhood. "I'm Lily, I'm the queen, I like everything." Lily had her own way of doing things. She wore band-aids all over her arms and legs to look brave. She talked backwards to herself sometimes so no one would know what she was saying. And she never left the house without one of her nifty disguises. Lily waved at all the cars that passed by, even if she didn't know who was in them. And she always carried a loaded squirt gun in her back pocket, just in case. "She definitely has a mind of her own," said Chester. "That's one way to put it," said Wilson. When Lily asked Chester and Wilson to play, they said they were busy. When she called them up on the phone, they disguised their voices and said they weren't home. If Lily was walking on one side of the street, Chester and Wilson crossed to the other and hid. "She's something else," said Chester. "Looks like it," said Wilson. One day, while Chester and Wilson were practicing their hand signals, some older boys rode by popping wheelies. They circled Chester and Wilson and yelled personal remarks. Chester and Wilson didn't know what to do. Just when they were about to give up hope, a fierce-looking cat with horrible fangs jumped out of the bushes and frightened the older boys away. Are you Huthoi? I think you are, Chester asked the cat.
Of course, the cat replied.
Well, why thank you, Lily, said Chester.
You're welcome, Chester, said Lily.
Thank you, Lily, said Wilson.
You're welcome, Wilson, said Lily.
I'm glad you were wearing a disguise, said Chester.
I'm glad you had a squirt gun, said Wilson.
I always do, said Lily, just in case.
Afterward, Chester invited Lily over for lunch.
You have a muscle mouse cup, said Lily.
Of course, said Chester.
I do too, said Lily.
Same here, said Wilson.
Wilson and Chester cut their sandwiches diagonally. Lily asked Chester's mother if she had a cookie cutters, and she made stars and flowers and bells.
Wow, that's neat, said Chester.
Wow, said Wilson.
That night, Lily invited Chester and Wilson to sleep over.
You have a nightlight, said Chester.
Of course, said Lily.
I do too, said Chester.
Same here, said Wilson.
Chester and Wilson wanted toast with jam and peanut butter for breakfast the next morning.
Boring, said Lily.
Try this instead.
This is good, said Chester.
Wow, said Wilson.
After that, when Lily asked Chester and Wilson to play, they said yes. When she called them up on the phone, they had pleasant conversations. And if Lily was walking on one side of the street, Chester and Wilson waved and ran to catch up to her. Chester and Wilson taught Lily hand signals, and she taught them how to pop wheelies. Lily taught Chester and Wilson how to talk backwards, and they taught her how to double knot her shoes.
Some days I can't tell those three apart, said Lily's mother.
Me either, said Lily's father.
Chester, Wilson, and Lily. Lily and Wilson and Chester. That's the way it was. For Halloween, they dressed as three blind mice. For Christmas, Lily gave Chester and Wilson nifty disguises. And they gave her a box of multicolored shoelaces, extra long for double knotting. They loved to go on picnics. When Wilson and Chester told Lily about how they had each swallowed a watermelon seed, Lily swallowed three of them.
I'll grow a watermelon plant for each of us, she said.
In spring, Chester and Wilson and Lily shared the same umbrella. In winter, they never threw snowballs at each other. In fall, they raked leaves. In the summer, they reminded each other to wear sunscreen so they wouldn't burn. Chester and Wilson and Lily, Lily and Wilson and Chester, that's the way it was. And then,
open to new learning, may your lips bring truth into the world. May your
This is a time in our service where you're invited to come forward and light a candle. It needs money in order to provide financial assistance and basic. This morning's reading is called The Changing Season. It was written by Elizabeth Tarbox, who was a Unitarian Universalist minister and esteemed colleague, who unfortunately was died from cancer several years ago now. I watched a man slowly, methodically, strain his sailboat out of the water this morning. The boat and the man moved reluctantly, resisting the work. He was marking the inevitable change of seasons, and as if to remind him that the days of summer were over, the waves suddenly gave irritable and slapped noisily at the streaming wet hull of the little craft. Lucky are those whose seasons merge together and are greeted with equanimity and even optimism. Lucky are those who can open their arms to changing seasons and changing life, noticing not the chill of encroaching autumn, but the fleeting beauty of a single yellow leaf floating delicately in that patch of ocean so recently occupied by a summer sailboat. May we know equal pleasure in the autumn leaves and in the summer's leisure. Quicken our senses to the good rich smell of morning earth and evening moisture.
Tune our hearts to the gentle scrunch of pine needles beneath our shoes and the industry of squirrels. May we know peace in the changing of the season and in the changing of our lives. Here ends the reading. Well, good morning. It's wonderful to be here on this first day of October. Boy, does it feel like it all of a sudden, right? Yeah, talking about change, and you can feel it in the air. That's quite something. And my voice seems to be changing. Hopefully my voice will hold out. So I've been here for a couple of months, but I really haven't had a lot of opportunity to talk with you all about interim ministry and change and transition and what that looks like from the perspective of an interim minister. So I'm actually going to try to be very ambitious this morning. I want to talk a little bit about the nature of change in general, and then how that also applies, of course, to communities as we go through change together. And then a little bit about my role as interim minister. Well, the Buddhist teachings can be boiled down to a couple of simple truths. There's nothing simple about Buddhism, but sometimes it seems fairly simple, but definitely not easy. But one of the main truths about the nature of life in the Buddhist tradition is that life is synonymous with change. Everything changes. Everything is impermanent, is the word that the Buddhists use a lot. Everything is impermanent. So as the cycles and seasons of change, the cycles and seasons of life change, so do we. So it's not so much the courage to change, right? We're changing all the time. Everything is changing all the time. It's really the courage to embrace change, to learn to attend to change, and to understand a bit about how change works. So when those scary parts of change come to us, we can kind of look it in the face and maybe understand a little bit how it might unfold going forward. One of my favorite Western Buddhist teachers is Sharon Salzberg. And she really does understand a lot about the nature of life and the nature of change. But like the rest of us, she's human. She knows we have a tendency to want to hold on to things, right? To hold back the hands of time, even, sometimes. She tells this, she has a great sense of humor, and she tells this little story about wanting to stop the seasons from changing. So a friend of hers from California can see the fall foliage in all its splendor when she visits New England for the first time. She writes, "I so much wanted the trees to remain beautiful for her. I felt like I wanted to stick the leaves on one by one so that they would still be there when she came." It's kind of a great image, right? As it turns out, Sharon's friend wasn't able to come after all that fall. And Sharon's response in typical fashion was, "Well, I guess now I can let nature take its course." She continues, "Of course, it's ludicrous to try to keep the leaves from falling from the trees. But look at how much of our lives is spent trying to do the same thing in other ways. How often we try to keep things from changing. Yet impermanence is the very fabric of our life. It's not just that our lives are always changing, it's that life is change." Life is change. Think about life flowing, life changing. We know that for things to be alive, there needs to be motion. And yet, how often do we want to think of our lives as something fixed and solid? The ground under our feet, right? The things that hold us up. The things that we can hold on to.
Well, there's a Zen parable that I want to share with you this morning about a man who finds himself running through the woods. You may be familiar with this little story. He's being chased by a ferocious tiger. You ever feel like that? You're running through the woods being chased by a ferocious tiger. Well, he runs and he runs and he runs until he stops short, having come to the edge of a cliff. Right, I heard that, Joe. Perched high above the ground below, with the tiger charging down on him, the man decides he has no choice but to jump. He has one chance of survival, which is a scrubby little bush growing out of the side of the cliff about halfway down. He jumps and miraculously grabs hold of the branch, and he's hanging on. He's kind of swaying there in the wind, and he looks down, and what does he see? Another tiger waiting there at the bottom of the abyss. But while he's hanging there, the man notices a small plant growing out of the side of the cliff, just within reach. From it hangs one ripe strawberry. One ripe, juicy strawberry, and he stretches out an arm and picks the berry and pops it in his mouth, and it's the sweetest thing he has ever tasted. Sweetest thing he has ever tasted. You can only imagine having the presence of mind to actually stop in the midst of a life-threatening situation like that, in the middle of free fall, so to speak, to pay attention to what's there and to grab it and eat it, to really taste it. We all know that it takes courage to jump. Even when something's chasing you, it still takes courage to jump, right? Off the cliff of everything that we've known, even if it's our only hope for survival. I first read this little Zen parable in a book called Learning to Fall, which was written by Philip Simmons. And Philip Simmons was a Unitarian Universalist who at the age of 35 was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a degenerative disease with not a great prognosis in terms of length of life. So he learns, he writes about learning to embrace change as he lives through this process of being inside a body that is degenerating over time, a body that's failing him. And over again, he finds himself being forced to jump into the abyss of the unknown to continue to taste life's sweetness. And this is what he had to say about this story. Only by letting go of our grip on all that we ordinarily find most precious, our achievements, our plans, our loved ones, our very selves, can we find ultimately the most profound freedom. The very essence of life slips through our fingers as we clutch and cling to try to hold on. It seems counterintuitive in some ways. It's in the letting go that we find that there's so much available there to us. Freedom lies in facing our fears of the unknown and letting go, even in the face of death. Another favorite quote of mine is from Donna Markova, who also wrote after being diagnosed with a terminal illness. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as a blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit.
when we're able to jump, to let go, to embrace change, we are embracing life. When we allow living to open us, we find there's so much more than what we've been clinging to. We find the freedom to become the source of new beginnings, the source of new life. And not to be morose, but in a very real sense, life is terminal, right? We're all on that course, right? We're all aging, and one day we're all going to die. It takes courage, no matter where we are, no matter what age we are, to embrace the unknown of whatever's next for us, to embrace aging and death. Those of us of a certain age have had the experience of looking in the mirror at the reflection we don't quite recognize, wondering, how the heck did that happen, right? It can feel like we're over the hill and the only place left to go is down. And here I want to give you just a little teaser for the book that we'll be discussing this fall, a little story from Aging as a Spiritual Practice by Zen priest and meditation teacher Lewis Richmond. He writes, once in one of my workshops, an attendee raised his hand and half jokingly said, I'm 58 and I know where I'm headed, downhill. It's all downhill from here. After a moment, I replied, well, I'm not sure I agree, but even if you're right, the real question is, are you going to just slide or are you going to steer? Are you going to slide or are you going to steer? And Lewis Richmond continues, everything changes, yes, but the truth has two sides. It's true that everything we love is destined to change, age, and pass away, but it is equally true that every moment brings with it new possibilities. We shouldn't allow our fixed ideas about aging to take those opportunities away. One of my Buddhist teachers likes to say, every breath, new chances. Every breath, new chances. And so if we say that everything changes, we should also add that everything is workable. Developing an awareness that change is a life-giving process can help us to find the courage that it takes to leap into the unknown. Now, I have to admit, it took me a while to actually embrace the idea of interim ministry. I have a lovely home and a family in just outside of Portland, Maine. And the hardest thing about embracing interim ministry for me was realizing that I would need to move away from home, to live away from home, to do the work that I love. And so it took me several years to go from a point of knowing that's where I really thought I wanted and should probably be moving in terms of my skills and interests to actually taking that leap into the unknown. And when I did take that leap into the unknown, I found myself going to Kingston, Ontario in another country, much less another state. And the gifts were immeasurable. There was a lot going on when I jumped off into the abyss. Not only did I had to navigate their healthcare system, I had to navigate meters instead of miles. There was all kinds of things I had to navigate in addition to the work and the work itself. But I found myself growing and changing. It really was a life-giving experience. And the work was amazing. The people were amazing. The opportunity to develop my understanding of change and how it works and how I can help facilitate that and help other people go through that process in an intentional way that points to the possibilities for a congregation to become who it most wants to become is very life-giving. It was life-giving for me, and I'm pretty sure it was life-giving for that congregation as well. And so I kind of have learned over the years, that was one example, and you all, I'm sure, have your own examples of times you've jumped off the cliff and that you know that you've jumped off into this place of, well, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not sure what's going to happen next.
but that when you allow yourself to stay in that place of unknowing, that things just pop up. Things happen. Things come to you. That's the place of creativity, the place of opportunity, the place of possibility. And so what's true for people is also true for organizations, right? There are always endings, arriving at the edge of the cliff with no choice but to jump. And even in organizations, each one of those changes is like a little death. You have to give it those endings they're due to do the grieving work that's necessary, because no matter how exciting the next chapter may be, it's important to acknowledge the losses, because things won't be the same as they were before, which can be a good thing, but you have to honor both sides of that. And in organizations, the struggle to come to terms with this kind of loss is often punctuated by the phrase, "But we've always done it this way." Right? Anatole Francis writes, "All changes, even the most longed for, have their melancholy. For what we leave behind is part of ourselves. We must die to one life before we can enter another." And to get to that place of new beginnings, there is this sense of free fall, or the neutral zone, as it's called in organizational jargon, the abyss of unknowing, jumping, and allowing that chaos and that confusion to create something new. So it's important to stay in that place of unknowing long enough to actually pay attention to what's going on in there, so you can decide what you want to bring forward, rather than prematurely trying to come to closure around something because you're feeling unsure, or like the ground is not under your feet the way it was at one point in the past. It's a very difficult time, right? And we all naturally want to move on to that place of either going back to where we were before or landing somewhere new. It's hard to stay in that place of unknowing. But then there is the time for new beginnings, based on the stronger sense of knowing what's been going on and all the chaos and all the confusion. Good things will happen. And if you pay attention to them, you can kind of pluck them out and say, "Hey, that worked. I wasn't sure how that was going to work out, but that was really cool. That was neat. I really like how that felt. We really felt like we pulled together on that." And those are the places that you can use as your anchor for your new beginnings. And so this is very brief, but by understanding and being more intentional about understanding the change process, I hope that we can all find the courage to embrace the process, to realize that we're still in the endings part. You know, this is new. It's new for me, it's new for you, but it's also an end of all that was. And you can carry the best of your history forward, but it's just going to be different going forward. And there's all this not knowing. What's going to happen next? We don't know. How are we going to meet our goals? We don't know. Exactly. We have some ideas. But to work together in that place, in that mess, in that chaos, in that confusion, being kind and considerate and thoughtful and intentional about the kinds of things we want to bring forward, that will help. That will help you bring forward the kinds of things that you really want to put at the forefront as you look ahead. I'm not here to manage a transition. I'm here to be your minister. Your interim minister, which is different from a settled minister. I am here to help you make the most of this transition. I'm here to help you embrace change. In short, that means that I'm here to love you, and then I'm going to leave you. And there's some good reasons for that. I am here to love you just the way you are. I already know that you are lovable people, that you have the capacity to love one another and to welcome anyone who walks through these doors.
You are enough. You are enough. I am here to listen to your stories, to learn what you cherish, to listen for what you might be grieving, to learn about the best you've been together and times when you might have felt like you might have come just a little bit short in that making that mark. I'm here to worship and work and play with you. I promise you I will be your biggest fan. I will be your cheerleader, your coach, your spotter, and your companion on this journey. I'm here to encourage you to relax and enjoy the ride. You know, if you know the James Taylor song about the secret of life is enjoying the passing of time, great song. It's really great for interim. Since we're already on our way down, we might as well enjoy the ride. No, it's a great song. Anyways, transitions are challenging, no doubt. But slowing down, remembering to breathe, savoring our time together, maybe even giving yourselves permission to let go of a thing or two. You are busy, busy beavers here at church and in your personal lives, I know. But let's all try to create the breathing room that we need to embrace the opportunities that come along. I'm certainly enjoying my time here with you so far. I'm here to share my observations, to hold up a mirror so that you can see yourselves more clearly. I will ask a lot of questions. You probably already noticed that. I ask a lot of questions. It's the gift of beginner's mind. I don't know anything about you. So I get to ask you questions that you may not have thought about for a while, because it's been a long time since you've had a new minister, right? It's been a long time since you've had somebody come in from the outside and try to make sense of all the things that are happening here. I'm here to share my observations, and we'll unpack some things together, right? We'll take a look at things, take them out of the attic, take them out of the basement, literally in some cases. And then you will decide which one of those things you want to actually put in your toolkit, your backpack, to bring forward into the future. And I'm here to shake things up a bit. Hopefully I will be brave and bold and fun like Lily, right? And I will surely do things differently. That's a big part of my job, is to give you an idea of a different model of ministry than what you've known before. I'll also give you a chance to loosen your grip on the way you've always done things. Just a little bit. This is your chance to embrace change, trying on new and different ways of being, to see what feels good, what feels right, what feels life-giving, so that you can decide who you are and what you want to be together going into the future. I'm here to help you explore what it means to be a covenantal people, people that make promises to each other about how they want to be in community. Together we'll struggle with all the suffering in the world and how to be people of integrity and action, that which is at the heart of our Unitarian Universalist tradition. Seeking a world of more love, more hope, more justice, and addressing the larger questions facing Unitarian Universalism about our relevance in a changing world. Above all, I want you to remember, this is your congregation, not mine, not any of your predecessors. I will support you every step of the way, but this is your work to do. You're the only ones who can claim your identity. You're the only ones that can create your vision for the future. And ultimately, all of this is important as you prepare to enter in the search process for your next settled minister. You will want that minister to have the passion, the drive, the skills and interest to help you bring your best selves forward into the future that's the brightest and best possible for you.
You'll select a search committee that you trust and take all the work that we've done together, looking at your history and identity and vision, and rolling it into a package that will give candidates a good sense of who you are and what you're looking for in a settled minister. I will do everything I can to respect and support that process, but again, this is your work to do. I will maintain a distance from that search process, supporting the search committee, but I won't have anything to say about any candidate for settled ministry at UUCM. It's very important that I retain that objectivity to help you make the best choice that you can. And at that point, I'll be preparing to leave. And knowing that I'll be leaving, we'll have the opportunity to have a good ending. One of the beautiful things about interim ministry is the opportunity to have a good beginning, a good middle, and a good ending. How many times do you really get to experience and celebrate a good ending? One that's intentional, one that you know is coming, and that's part of the plan, part of the process. And you'll be making room to fully embrace your next settled minister. I'll be preparing to embrace change once again with another interim ministry position. A new congregation standing on the edge of the cliff, getting ready to jump off into the abyss when you're coming to a beautiful place of new beginnings and a landing. I wish you the best in all this. I am so very grateful to have the opportunity to be here working with you, sharing this incredible journey with you all. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen. And I'd like to invite Tricia to come up to invite us all to enter into a covenant together.
Thanks. Please rise in body or in spirit and enter into a covenant together with Reverend Carol Strecker, our interim minister. The words are on the monitors. Good. We welcome you as our partner in ministry during this interim period at the threshold of our brief journey together. We will use our hands and our hearts, our vision and voices to heal and strengthen this beloved community, this time of transition. We will dare to disagree agreeably with each other, with you to dream what we may become, and to freely venture the untried. We will share our portions of truth with you, and listen deeply and learn that we may grow in wisdom and vision and understanding.
That sounds good. It is my honor and privilege to walk with you through this exciting time in the life of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Milford. I welcome the opportunity to be your partner in ministry during our brief time together. I will use my observations, experience, and insights to help you heal and strengthen this beloved community through this time of transition, striving to be a mirror in which you can see the best of who you are and what's possible for your future. I will be your biggest fan, your cheerleader, and your coach. I will listen to you, love you, and challenge you from time to time. I will be honest with you, knowing that the dream is yours to dream and the work is yours to do. I will learn from you, and together we will grow in wisdom, vision, and understanding. In this
brief and precious time, may we nurture the best in each other, and together bring the best of who we are to the world.
I invite you now to sing our closing hymn, to stand in body or in spirit, as you're willing and able. We laugh, we cry. It's number 354 in the gray hymnal. It's also on the monitors.